United Lodges Theosophists. We'll begin with declaration and the announcements. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification in practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity, without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves, by study and otherwise, to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. Now, here in Philadelphia, we are one of 30 or so lodges throughout the world. We promulgate the principles of the philosophy of theosophy here at the lodge by holding two weekly meetings, one on a Sunday from 11 to 12 noon. Doors open at 10:30. And of course on Wednesday evenings, doors open at 5:30, and from 5:30 to 7:30, there's 2 hours of opportunity to use the reference library. It's a public reference library. And then from 7:45 to 9 o'clock is the weekly Wednesday study class in the Ocean of Theosophy. There's in the foyer, there's also a book table available to students and the public, where one can purchase at cost straight line theosophical pamphlets, books, literature. The lodge is entirely sustained by voluntary contributions of time, money, and effort, and any contributions are gratefully received, but there is no obligation imposed or implied. The meetings are free and open to all. Now, this next Sunday, we'll obviously begin January, and the umbrella topic for the month of January, for the Sunday meetings, will be the path of spiritual evolution. And next Sunday's topic, in particular, will be the basics of meditation. This morning's topic, under the general heading Cycles and Cyclic Law, this morning's topic is New Year, New Cycle. And we have a reading to begin the meeting with from the writings of Robert Crosby and William Q. Judge. Let us resolve one thing, resolve to know, think right, and do right. Resolve to acquire some of the knowledge that has always existed. The knowledge of man as a spiritual being through all his fluctuations in the realm of matter. Every day of this year should be used wisely, earnestly, thoroughly, so that we shall be able at each anniversary to feel that we have lived nearer to our highest ideals and at least tried to do the work which, of all others, humanity needs. Today's topic is New Year, New Cycle.
That reading, we think, is such a fit compilation for our goals for the new year that we printed it out. If anyone would like to take it with them, it will be on the book table after the meeting. And the schedule is not yet in its normal format. So it is a piece of paper for January, February, March, just behind the usher. So our goal today is to consider what the new year and new cycle means and to find our place within it. Something we had never read before studying for today, that if we start with December 5th and count 8 days forward, we arrive at January 1st. Huh? And that 8...
What?
25th.
December 25th. What did I say? I'm sorry. Start again. If we start with December 25th, which we've been studying as the birth of the Saviors throughout time, and count 8 days forward, we arrive at January 1st. And that number 8, if we think about it, is a symbol of perfect equality. Turned on its side, of course, it means to us infinity, but it's a starting point of balance. And it's a good remembrance for us that each January 1st, we have a moment of perfect balance from which to begin again. We hear it in the words, "The earth passes through its definite phases and man with it. And as a day can be colored, so can a year." Now, throughout time and among all peoples and all belief systems, the beginning of the year was marked as an occasion with deep meaning. We had some kind of a recognition internally that something special was going on. It had its relation, we know, cosmically and astronomically, to the return of the sun from its furthermost course, a return which brings with it the revivifying influences to all the kingdoms of nature of which we are a part. So that influence touches the inner life of all forms and gives renewed impetus to expansion and growth. We know this because we see everything go underground or look as if it has receded into itself, but yet there must be tremendous activity because in the proper cycle it will bloom forth again. We are no different. We have a natural perception of occult law and our observance of this particular time of the year. We don't even realize it, but we are wholly in line with nature and the cycles. So when the sun's rays become warmer and stronger, although we feel cold in this part of the globe, the sun is closer and stronger, and it behind the sun itself and behind ourselves, all the forces of nature become stronger. So in making use of this increased energy, we are likely, as a habit or a cycle, to make a resolution. The first thing we usually do wrong is to make a negative resolution. I will not do this anymore. I will not smoke. I will not lie. I will not do this or that. We have then added to it the negative. The proper resolve to make is I will do this, and we'll talk about why in a few minutes. We will do the opposite of what we are doing now. It's a direct affirmation of will. We may not realize that power or how we're using it or what it means, but it's a direct affirmation, I will do. So we have to call on the will of man, for that will is not restrained by any form of obstacle whatever. That sentence just amazed us. Will is not restrained by any form of obstacle whatever. And we know behind will stands desire. So there is a mental phase of the will which can be cultivated and practiced. We understand if we focus and fix our attention, our concentration, We are capable of affecting desired results. I will hold my mind on one spiritual idea, and the effect of that concentration or meditation will be felt over time. But the real and true will is known as the spiritual will, which is said to fly like light and cut all obstacles like a sharp sword. It is that will proceeding from the highest spiritual part of our nature which causes man to evolve from within outwards. It is a spiritual power. All the powers that exist or can exist are latent, however ill expressed in the spiritual nature. So we carry them with us wherever we go, whatever we're doing. We were once conscious of this spiritual nature, but we come down through the planes of expression and get more and more attached to them until we have forgotten completely that we are still that. We haven't changed. We are still the spiritual being in evolution, but for the moment we identify with what we see and what we hold focus on. So to realize our own true natures, we begin at the highest point. Assume that it is. That's all that can be said. It is. And hold to the power of that assumption. So we see light by the very affirmation of that spiritual nature. We learn to recognize evolution under law. Cycles and cyclic law was the topic for the month. That law is both true and merciful and operates everywhere. It is because that law operates in a round of impression that we have the tendency each year to make these New Year's resolutions. So we could, if we understood this process truly, make use of this recurrence, bringing into effect better resolutions. So how do we begin? We seem to follow the custom without knowing the soul force behind it. Well, from magazine Theosophy, we hear this. To mankind, there comes a new and fresh vigor to all his channels of life from within outwards, gradually strengthening as the sun moves nearer. The ancients, being aware of this fact and realizing that life is one through all its manifestations, took advantage of the birth of the year to reaffirm their highest aspirations, thus consciously seizing the time. So what is the opportune time? Is it January 1st? Theosophy offers the idea it might be January 4th. It is the day of Mercury, of Hermes, of Buddha, a celebration of a giver of wisdom. January 4th is 14 days, or two cycles of seven, after the winter solstice. It is the perihelion day, when the earth makes the closest approach to the sun, and man's body and spirit receive the annual cosmic spark. Now this harkens back to a time when we were first receiving that spark, and we had that discussion in another class recently. But this is the anniversary of that, in a sense. It's a cyclic returning of that. So at this time of year, great beings from higher regions are nearer to us now. These ancient festivals were instituted by sages. They penetrated to the soul of things at different times of antiquity, of which our history holds no records, but mythology does. So success? How do we get success in this process? In order for a plan of action to be successful, it must be vividly imagined and clearly conceived by the mind. Whatever we do, imagination must link will and action. Whatever we do, Imagination must link will and action. So a resolution, or a synonym for that being courage, is the act of analyzing a complex notion into simpler ones. It is the process or capability of making distinguishable the individual parts of an object or sources of light. These are in the dictionary. Or it could be the measure of the sharpness of an image. All of these ideas are right there for us, but we don't consider them except on their face. And a vow, which is part of a resolution, which is a resolution, a solemn promise or assertion, specifically one by which a person is bound to an act, service, or condition. So not only are we putting forth first the desire, then the will, then the action, but we are binding ourselves to its result, which is why it is so important, Theosophy tells us, before we make a resolution, to seriously consider these things and be very conscious when we choose what to resolve, that we will attain that. The future lies in the present, and both include the past. So the proper resolution, I will do the opposite of the current problem. If we want to stop smoking, I will breathe fresh air. I will be kind to all I encounter. I will be healthy as much as I can. Anything in the positive arouses will, and we need to maintain the desire to keep the will exerted in that direction. So this is an ongoing thing. It's not a, I'm making it, and then I can forget about it. Why make it? You are breaking a promise to yourself, we are told. Breaking a promise like this is an action of the lower self and thus strengthens it, which is the opposite of our intention. So how do we formulate higher desires and resolutions? We are told of four pillars of a pledge: absolute sincerity, unflinching determination, unselfishness of purpose, and moral power, the most important. So we must very carefully consider sincerity, determination, unselfishness, and moral power or integrity. We must very, very carefully consider what we will pledge. We must begin at the highest point of our nature, and by holding to the power of that idea, we begin to see the light by the very affirmation. We begin to touch and realize and recognize that higher within us. So then let us make the great resolve, as we heard in the reading this morning. Resolve to know. Resolve to think right and do right. Resolve to acquire knowledge of man as a spiritual being. And as we rely more and more upon the self within, we begin to express and use the power which we already have, and that is far more than we could imagine at this moment. After all, we're told, look within. Thou art Buddha. And the secret to understanding it? Resolve to act as if. Your thoughts and questions invited? Yes.
We found it interesting, those four, were they the four pillars of a vow?
Of a pledge.
Of a pledge. Okay, the four pillars of a pledge.
Absolute sincerity.
Okay, because when the way it was presented, we thought, well, we would have thought that, you know, imagination and desire would be involved with that if it's something that we're resolving to do. Would imagination and desire be inherent in any one of those four, or is that just is it off track?
The four pillars of a pledge, we think they describe the desire. The desire is the first plane upon which we begin this process. What do we hold as what we want to do? Absolute sincerity. I will create this situation. I fully intend to sincerely carry it through. So that's an underlying part of it. Unflinching determination. I will fulfill this resolution. Unselfishness of purpose. Very important. What is our motive? What will the results be? How will this affect everything and everyone around me? Unselfishness of purpose. And moral power, again, the motive. If they are in line and proper, then the fuel which we are giving to the will is the proper fuel.
Just a quick follow-up. That makes sense, the unselfishness of purpose. And that speaks to the desire, the highest use of desire.
Okay. Right. And then the vow was the other part. Then the vow is the resolve to know, resolve to think right, to act right. So it's forming over time and with great consideration. And we have plenty of days before January 4th, by the way, to do this. Forming the proper ideas for our desire, for our pledge, for our resolution, and then the actual action of it, resolve to put all of that desire into I resolve to, I will, and so forth. Your hand was up.
In my experience, it seems like there's two wills. You know, there's the higher will, the spiritual will that they were talking about, which seems to me that is something that I don't have any control over myself. That just is. And that's what truly dictates evolution. Then there's this other little tiny will of this false entity that I call Chris or whatever, that can formulate all kinds of things and can perhaps make some little things happen. But in terms of evolution, it never really seems to be able to accomplish much of substance. I think from that standpoint, you know, so I'm trying to figure out there's something that I'm supposed to do with this will.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I've determined is it's basically trying to discern what the real spiritual will is and to just work in harmony with that, not to kind of create something that's separate. So that's where my mind is going.
Yes. So it appears as if there's two wills, the higher spiritual will and that lower will that sort of gets in the way and doesn't do much in the way of evolution or the things that we understand the higher will can do. Well, consider that the first thing that happens when man arrives on the scene, when the human form incarnates, there is a duality of everything. We say higher mind, lower mind, higher will, lower will. There's the spiritual, which is ever present, and its reflection, let's say, on this plane, which we believe to be all there is. Now, one of the things you said was using that lower, we can't evolve. That's the only way we can evolve right now, because we need it for contact with this plane. Our experience takes place in the physical world, the material world. We can choose to believe that's all there is, or we can choose to think, what's a higher way for me to work through my challenges in this physical world? We can call on and recognize it to be the higher within anytime we choose. The difficulty is holding on to it. And it says in ancient times, we knew it, we were it, we were nothing but it, because our consciousness was so attuned that that's all we felt. We would no more think of harming a creature of any kind than, you know, anything in the world. So that duality is necessary, but this whole idea is lifting that lower use of will to recognize it can be used in better, more altruistic, or higher ways. We have some hands.
We think it's complicated unless we remember that that duality is perceptual. Right. It is how we right. as thinkers well. Perceive left, right, up, down, in, out. But the fact is, there is only one mind. I can use it in a higher way or a lower way. That means I choose. If I am enamored of the lower, then of course I keep choosing in that direction. Even then I will learn, because as a thinker, I will get the results of all that stupidity, and sooner or later will ask why, what am I doing wrong? So there isn't a higher will and a lower right. will. There is I using will in the direction I choose.
Yes.
We must never forget that.
Thank
never
you.
Blame the lower or think the higher is out of sight. We're only one thing.
Right. There is one mind. There is one will. Thank you. I appreciate that. Yes.
So in my attempts to use my will through a higher quality, if I were to will to move that chair, no matter how much I try, it won't move. It just
is that a higher use of will?
And but then, if I were to say will myself to stop smoking, I don't smoke, but for example,
mm-hmm.
and I will it in my mind to my astral body, because my astral body is not a physical chair. It's made of more refined particles and materials, whether it's astral or etheric. And if I apply my will to that, I perceive, and I may be wrong, that my thoughts, my will, has a greater effect in those planes than in this one, like moving the chair.
Potentially, but once again, what are we doing on this plane where all of our brothers and sisters are working together to uplift all of life here? That's our job. We have the potential to do unbelievable things, unimaginable things at this stage of our development. But our job on this plane as soul in evolution is to not only fit ourselves, we heard in the declaration, to be the better able to help and teach others, but to turn using will and help uplift all of life. So perhaps our thoughts and our aspirations are better spent in those directions. And I saw some hands in the back.
Well, it seems that while we are always in a physical body using the astral, which affects or directs the physical, when we're making a resolution, a promise to ourselves, it has nothing to do with the astral or the physical. It is within our own nature of heart and mm-hmm. mind, and it's our level of sincerity about what we want to accomplish and why, as you said, that's what's affected. You don't need a body to be a spiritual being. You don't need a body to create these resolutions and determinations. You need your heart and mind. And if you hold it there, your poor body has no choice but to go along with you. And anyone who's ever given up anything physical knows that there is a certain point when your body is no longer speaking to you, but you are getting what you want. After all, we created the habit.
Right.
So we don't think we should make it so complicated as physical and astral. It's right. will and determination.
Will and determination. Was there a hand in the back? Mm-hmm. No? Okay. Yes.
Well, we should try to simplify at first what we're trying to say. And most of us are familiar in our education and our daily lives of what inspiration means. And we always think of the charge of the Light Brigade. It may be fiction, but still. The officer in command raises his sword. And he says, charge. Well, everyone looks to that officer to inspire them
mm-hmm.
to charge. And he does by being at the head. the will not function unless there is desire behind it. So when we say inspiration, that's a combination of the desire to do your duty. And we all know what some of our elders, our school teachers, our coaches, our company commander, his duty is to inspire. And when this charge is successful, those who are in the front, whether they are still alive or they have been passed, they get a medal of honor or a Purple Heart or whatever. Without that desire to do your duty, the will remains stable. So all of us operate with it in our daily lives when it's something that we want bad.
Exactly. We're very familiar with it when it's a desire that we want fulfilled. And it's interesting the word you used, inspiration, which really means influx of spirit. So there's also an element of enthusiasm that we hadn't thought about before. What was mentioned was the cycles we've set up with the body and the lower vehicles to behave in a certain way. And they are very happy going along that path of cycles that we've set up. The moment we stop and say, I will to do this, they will fight back because we have charged them up. We must have the enthusiasm and the inspiration and the aspiration to not only resist that, but to move the will forward. So that desire, we talked about the pillars of a pledge, must be absolutely as strong and inspired as we can possibly make it. And if we set out and fail, pick it up again. You haven't failed forever. You've tried. Well, what did I do wrong? Maybe I wasn't absolutely sincere. Let me think about what I really wanted to do. Let me recharge it. From now until Easter, the life of the earth is young and strong. It's in the period of activity, whether it's underground or not, of growth, of expansion. We have all this time. Start with January 4th and do your very, very best. If you find by January 10th you've already lost it, reevaluate, recommit, re-resolve. And start again, because it's a lifetime's meditation, actually. Yeah.
We made a promise to quit smoking to someone on their deathbed, and we followed through, and it's been 27 years, and it was actually easy to quit.
The desire was what?
The desire was there.
To honor the one.
I really respected this person, and she, I know, loved me very much and didn't want to see me suffer like she has.
Mm-hmm. So it really goes to the desire and why that desire is fueled and what goes into that. Sometimes we have to take out our magnifying glass and be the scientist and try to discern exactly what's going on, because we don't do that often. We sort of act and get the reaction and go, oof, I don't know where that came from, and we move on. Go back. There's a lesson. There's gold there. Do some mining for it. Yes.
I've read in this theosophical literature that these habits are forming lower, baser qualities in the etheric and the astral body. When we have that will to get rid of a habit, are we actually modifying our astral and etheric body, changing its dynamics, changing its structure, where we're now purifying it of those elementals?
We couldn't speak to what it's doing to the astral body. We really are just trying to pay attention to the physical. We're sure, well, one of the things it says is that the astral doesn't change much from birth to death. But really, truly, we concentrate on the physical because that is the vehicle that we have to work through, and that's what needs the most work, we think. Yes.
Yes, the fact is said that we attract to ourselves the elements that suit our nature, and it's an ongoing, constant thing. So as we change various physical habits, as you say, we alter the chemistry of our own physical body. We don't think that affects the astral, but we don't know. We would suggest that the questioner do research on it in the secret doctrine and come back and tell us.
Mm-hmm. That's always a good thing. The gentleman in front of you?
Yeah. As far as habits go, one of the things that I read a long time ago and always seemed to stick through is that out of all of the things that a slave man, habits are the greatest.
I'm sorry, out of all of the things?
Out of all of the things that a slave man, habits are the greatest. And the only thing that you can do, you cannot get rid of habits. You can only replace them with new habits and better habits.
Exactly.
And that is the idea. That's why when you say you address, you don't say, you don't address it in a negative, you address it in a positive. I'm not a smoker.
Right. Mr. Crosby gives us a wonderful example. If you're moving into a new home, you're not picturing old furniture there. You're picturing what the new home will look like. You're not projecting the old. You're replacing it with something new. We don't think we said that well, but yeah.
I believe that habits are based on a higher spiritual plan that, for example, we don't have control over. And the reason that habits end up being replaced is that we don't learn the lesson that that habit is supposed to teach us. I used to smoke, and I tried hundreds of times to try to quit smoking, and every time I failed. And I would consider myself to be someone who I would think would have a strong will in terms of manifesting what I want. I've done pretty well with things like that. So, but these habits, it's like I have no control over them. One last time, and I don't know what the difference was, but I realized something about smoking. I realized that it was always taking me out of the moment because I was always worrying about and thinking about when I'm going to have my next cigarette. As soon as I figured that out, it was effortless. I stopped with zero effort, zero determination. So I would maintain that all of these things in our will just happens. We think we have will, but we really don't have any will to actually accomplish anything. What's supposed to happen just happens through us, and we evolve spontaneously. And this little thing that we call will, if it just creates conflict, it just stirs up, we're fighting the grain, and we just need to find out and work with harmony, even if that harmony is a habit that seems to be bad, until we learn the lesson.
So let me ask a question. Would you consider harmony a spiritual power rather than will? You're saying will is something outside us there's.
Yeah.
I want to understand what you're saying before
I
respond.
The spiritual will is something that we don't have control over. There's
okay.
One universal will that happens through us.
Okay.
And we're just fighting against and trying to change it into what we think we want, and that will never happen. What my job is to do is to find out what that universal will is, and then to work in harmony with.
Part of what you're saying is right on target, and part of what you're saying proved the other part is wrong. No offense meant at all.
I'm here to learn.
We all are. We're learning from one another. There is universal will. There is the spirit. When we say spiritual, we mean universal. There is the universal counterpart for everything of which it is said we are the microcosm of the macrocosm, as above, so below. So there is that universal will. And what you said was it works without you changing it, affecting it. It just works. You have nothing to do with it. But you also said you tried 100 times to quit smoking, and one time you did. It was effortless. So those 100 times didn't produce any effort on that last time.
I don't believe.
You said you read something?
No.
About the effects of smoking. What was it you said?
I said that I had this moment where I realized that there was nothing productive about it. I thought I enjoyed it, and I realized all it was doing was taking me out of the moment.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, boom, lesson learned. And that habit didn't shift to another habit. That habit was dissolved.
Lesson learned. So what you're also describing is karma. When we say habits or character or tendencies, we're also talking about the karmic tendencies and lessons that we create for ourselves. No one else could create them for us. Nobody put the cigarette in your mouth and made you smoke it. And we all have karmic debts, karmic lessons. The only way that we can resolve them is through the use of will. It is that which gives the energy to our desires. Your desire was to quit smoking, and you tried and you tried and you tried. And each time you tried, and we don't mean to be so personal, we apologize, but each time there's an effort to change a habit, when the cycle returns, it brings that effort with it. So eventually the conditions are right and the mind is right and the will is used in a way where all of that achieves the goal. However long it takes is however long it takes to change that cycle. But we are the only ones who can break our own habits, change our own cycles, create new cycles, which we are doing every moment, because we are affecting and influencing everything by how we think, how we desire, how we act. Some thoughts on that?
So it seems in one way that we're saying it's a matter of growing out of it. And so that, you know, some people will quit the smoking and it's a cold turkey thing and it's can drive people nuts or whatever. And may be successful in it, and it takes that much more effort. But there's another way, and that it's a matter of growing and leaving it behind. You know, so a lot of what we want to talk about this is the habits that we're going to change. But part of New Year's resolutions, instead of that, is what am I not doing that I could do more of, that I don't even really think about much, and that's all part of growth. And also, using our time and our minds in different ways, in more productive ways of service.
Right. And if we really delved into it, and it's a wonderful study, the will, what could we open our eyes in the morning without the use of will? Could we do anything without the use of will? It's a power of the mind. We are mind beings. And as we choose by desire to do, think, say, speak, feel something, we energize will and set it into motion. That's what the Asafi says. We don't know what else to say about it. Yes?
If I were to quit smoking, and having been successful in quitting smoking, why is it that I egotistically point to my will that was responsible for me to quit smoking, and not the greater will?
I mean, I don't have to point to any will.
I take the credit. On one hand, I take my credit for my tiny little will finally doing something great. If just prior to that, I completely conceded to the fact that it's the greater will in the universe, and the harmony of that universe that literally governs, you know, our lives. If that was the case, why am I so egotistic to take credit with my tiny little will, when I technically should be given credit to the greater scheme of things?
Interesting question, and we would offer the idea that the only thing that is tiny and little in our world are our desires, our lower desires. When we talk about spiritual powers, they are beyond the grasp of our mind. So we would never consider them tiny and little. Our use of them causes them to be perceived as little or lower or higher or grander. But we need to perhaps pay more attention to the process apply that process to the next challenge that we have, the next thing we resolve to change, and not worry so much perhaps about taking credit for it. As we said, we can rejoice in it. I understand something, and I've made a change, and others that love us will rejoice with us. And then put it down and get back to work, because we have lifetimes of habits and cycles and things to work on. And I have to move because there's five hands up in the corner.
Well, we would put forth the idea of that greater will doing something to us or for us as being an external idea, rather than we are that external will. Just like, you know, when we speak of that deific essence, that we are that. Mm-hmm. We are that will. It's not an external will that is going to make these changes for us.
Yes.
It's that we are accessing that spiritual will by trying to make our minds porous to the movement of it. But it's, you know, we are that essence.
Absolutely. The moment we separate ourselves mindfully from any of these ideas or powers or considerations, we have centered ourselves in the lower. We consider that this is outside me. Maybe one day I'll figure it out. It's beyond my comprehension. We have set ourselves on a path where we will do just what we said. We won't understand. We choose not to work to figure it out. So yes, the moment we separate or anthropomorphize or in any way cause to be recognized as outside our very nature, we're on the wrong path, yes.
What about the will to help others? So far, it's just, we've been talking quite a bit about stopping self-destructive habits, mm-hmm. but what about the will to altruism, the will to look around and to really feel that we need to do something for humanity?
That we think would be the highest use of will. And it's the beginning of the year, and it's a wonderful time to take stock. Don't we have enough of everything? Don't we have too much sometimes, or at least enough? Aren't there millions of people who could benefit even just by our good wishes? Theosophy says if you really concentrate and hold in mind the idea of something spiritual. We are fragments of the all-pervading deity working together, and send that out. That hopefulness is felt on some level, especially by those who need it, but by everyone. So yes, an aspiration towards something spiritual or altruistic honors and is the best use of that will. Thank you.
But to go back for just a minute to, well, not personalizing, but individualizing my experience. Wow, I made that resolution. I kept that resolution. Look at me now. That is a learning. That is an experience. And it proves to me I have will. I am learning how to use it. So we don't think we should overlook, I gave up smoking, I gave up whatever. Mm-hmm. We should celebrate it and recognize our own power in it. How did I do it? How am I going to do it the next time? One other thing we wanted to mention is Theosophy does warn, never make a resolution in this cycle of the astral life of the earth being young and strong. Never make it flippantly. Mm-hmm. Only make a resolution you are determined to keep, because you'll weaken your own use of will if you do it otherwise.
Absolutely. Thank you. Yes.
So, we're talking about habits and we're talking about will. I think a large part we have. And I think until we are able to understand the basis, I don't think increasing the will is going to get you there. So if it means stopping smoking, there has to be a fear that got you to smoke to begin with. You know, kids who start smoking will start it because they will have a fear of not fitting in. You have to kind of understand that first cause or that cause that kind of got you to that fear. And once you conquer fear, you can then apply will. That's kind of my thinking behind it, to get to the body.
Yes. Very important point. Theosophy says fear freezes the will because we get so bound down, literally, in the lower, to a place where we are unable to move or think outside or break whatever that is. And it's karmic. On some level, we need to learn whatever that lesson is for us. But we also find ourselves karmically with those around us who can help us, perhaps, get through it. So, yes, there are a lot of lessons that we have left unfinished or unthought of to this point, which may hinder our progress, but it doesn't mean we should ever stop trying. Interesting point. Thank you.
And yeah. We should always try to put the cart behind the horse. I understand that the platform gives out those declarations and explains the fundamentals, which means the foundation, the aim, and the purpose. And then on one of the circles, it gives three objects. And those objects lead us further on. Mm-hmm. So unless we get some grasp of our true nature, and then we will go in every direction. So those of us who have had military service, company of maybe 50 young men don't normally wait around the bar. But by the time the commander keeps calling me, listen to me, boy, and that starts something within that man. I will, and this is exactly what we're talking about, I will do it. I will learn. And then on graduation day, the company commander has a smile. And he goes into the company, he picks out maybe the weakest one in the company. You're in charge. What happened? How did I do it? So let us first understand those fundamental ideas. The aim and the purpose. We have the Gita, we have voice of silence, and our meetings.
And that, we think, is the perfect prescription for dealing with fear. If we truly understand, we are one. There is no separation among any of us. If we truly understand, the spiritual essence is within everything and everyone, that it cannot be destroyed or changed or in any way touched, that we go through cycles under law that have their beginning and their end as we choose to work on them, that we are evolving and learning and growing every moment that we're alive, and with more effort, the better. And as it says in the Gita, never were we not, always will we be. The fear could never stand up to those ideas. If I am an eternal soul working with other eternal souls, trying to do our best with another lifetime to finish whatever I don't get done this lifetime and forever working forward until I truly live as that spiritual essence I am, what is there to fear? And it's the real deep grasp and understanding of that that eventually erodes that frozen, stuck place where we are. And we do it a little bit at a time every day. Make that your first thought in the morning and your last thought before going to bed. Yes?
There's an acronym used to overcome fear, and it's F-E-A-R, false evidence appearing real.
Mm-hmm. False evidence appearing real. What is wrong with what I'm looking at? False evidence. This can't be true. And it appears real only as I give it the power to appear real to me.
Well, we can use that to become a scientist. If theosophy says this personal physical nature is just a delusion that I am engrossed in, how can I prove that to myself? I can start looking for, oh, you know, I've had some dreams that told me about things that were going to happen, and they happened. Well, obviously, this isn't as real as my dreaming self. And then keep on going, looking for evidences of what is real. And once we do that enough, we're going to start to trust it.
Absolutely. And going back to an earlier point, we were thinking we are always, and the universe is always, creating, preserving, and destroying so as to recreate in cyclic measure. There is a continuous effort throughout the universe, throughout time, throughout ages, to constantly become better, to become more aware, to let go of that which no longer suits the mind and replace it with something better. And we do that by trying. As was said, we try out a new idea. We try to find the false evidence and sift through it. What replaces it? I will understand this. And the more we work on it, the better, because we are all affecting each other all the time. We have time for one more. Yes?
Let us not forget Mother Nature.
Mother Nature.
And think about that. It's not all masculine, mm-hmm. but it's clean. Mother Nature.
Mother Nature. Absolutely. We have some thoughts for you as you leave today. And we would wish you all a happy new year. This is from the writings of Theosophy. Every person who draws the breath of life affects the mental and moral atmosphere of the world and helps to color the day for those about him. Masters make it divine. As a day can be colored, so can a year. The astral life of the earth is young and strong between Christmas and Easter. With the right use of our will, any new endeavor started at this time has added support of nature's own renewed energies. We must act from within, from our divine nature. Happy New Year, meeting adjourned.